The Guardian.
Hello everyone, welcome to Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Today, the Carabao Cup, Bristol City push the champions close, and Arsenal and Chelsea decide to wait until the second leg. Elsewhere, a disappointingly sensible start to VAR, and how excited is Sid about Coutinho? Plus voodoo with Mashiri, gardening with Wenger, poetry, and lots on kebabs. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Paul Doyle, hello.
Hi Max.
Is your TV fixed?
No.
Do you have a new one?
No.
Oh, that's been quite a while now.
Yeah, oh. I don't miss it.
Oh, do you not at all?
No, just don't ask me about any of the football that was televised recently.
Okay, only games that you've been to or listened to on the wireless. And look, my favourite bit of a Paul Doyle pod is when you bring up a footballer from the 1700s. So I hope you've got one.
I'll think of one.
Yeah, perfect. You've got plenty of time. Ben Fisher.
Hello.
Debut.
Yeah, well.
And then the exciting news is, as Barry was saying before we started recording, you began as work experience behind the glass where producer Mel is sitting, watched it, and how long between being from there to here has it taken?
What is it, two and a half years? Yeah, it's sort of the academy graduate sort of pathway.
Did Barry make you do a terrible initiation where you were stripped down and forced to drink wee out of a shoe?
Not as of yet, no. Maybe that's coming.
Well, who knows? There's always part two for that.
Well, that's what I was going to do that.
Anyway, so for any aspiring podders, all you have to do is tweet Barry. He'll get in touch. Come and watch a pod, and in 2.5 years you'll be sitting here. And you're it's football league expert, Ben. Is that acceptable?
Like to... It's a nice tag to have. We're doing a weekly piece from next week in the Football League, so it could be an interview or something, and sort of taking a look at all things Football League.
Okay, good.
Ben did a very good behind the scenes piece from Bristol City during the week, which I'm sure we will get to presently.
We'll get to very quickly. We just have to introduce you, Barry.
All right.
Welcome.
Hello.
I've written you're a Carabao Cup box expert.
That's correct. Although I have been my Carabao Cup box, which is all I really bring to this party, has been behaving very erratically, I'm quite nervous today. Thank God for that.
Marvellous. So let's start there. Why not? We'll start with the Man City-Bristol City game because it was considerably better than the Chelsea-Arsenal. The games to miss on TV, Paul, because you don't have a telly. Last night's was a good one to miss. You're a Bristol City fan, Ben. How excited were you watching this game?
Yeah, it was ridiculous, to be honest. More so because Bobby Reid, who scored the penalty, he's sort of quite an interesting player, an academy graduate himself. And sort of till recently, he's really sort of not really done it. He's sort of had one of those players that I think the fans, because he's through the academy, a Bristol boy, he's just sort of... You sort of let him off when he's not playing as well, and now he is playing really well. It's sort of even better. And sort of spoke to somebody there in the academy recently, and they're saying that when you have an affinity with the club, it sort of gives you that extra 10% in the fans. You know, the fans love it even more, and it's good to see somebody like him sort of, you know, make a real sort of show of it.
I said on the wireless yesterday, Barry, is this a blueprint for how to beat Manchester City? And a number of listeners got in touch to remind me that they didn't actually win the game, but they did at least have a go.
They did. I think they acquitted themselves far better than quite a few Premier League teams have against Manchester City. You know, I like the way they got their central midfielders forward constantly. There was one stage where Marlon Pack had a decent shot straight at the keeper, Bravo. And, you know, I think it counted 5 Bristol City players in the box when the cross came in. You know, you don't see that too often against City when they're playing Premier League teams, let alone lower league sides. So, you know, it wasn't a full-strength City team. That should be pointed out. I'm not sure how strong a Bristol City team it was.
About as strong as it could get, really. Yeah. Lots of injuries as well, it's worth pointing out.
Yeah, they have had a lot of injuries. I think when they won the quarter-final, second leg, or qualified for the semi, they had 10 players sidelined.
How do you think the quarterfinal happens? Two legs, a qualification group, or just a match?
Pardon?
The game against Manchester United was just a match.
Yes, okay, sorry. But there was 10 players, 9 or 10 players sidelined that night, you know, so that is a lot of casualties to be missing. But, yeah, really happy for them. And you wouldn't rule them out of getting something in the second leg, you know. Maybe winning outright, taking it to penalties.
Would you rule that out, Paul?
No, City have their progress through the Carabao Cup hasn't been plain sailing. Every round has been difficult for them. Granted, they haven't fielded their strongest possible team in them, but
I thought it was sort of heartless of City to score so late. I mean, I understand how football. Well, it's arguable, but I understand some of the rules. All right, I just thought it wasn't fair. Do you know what I mean?
It probably makes it more satisfying, though, for them. They've made a habit of that this season. They've scored a lot of late goals this season. It's probably just an extra little satisfying twist on their victories.
I felt sad because it was a Bristol City error that sort of led to the goal. You know, the keeper could have done better, came out for the ball, didn't get it. You know, there's no way he should be beaten by Sergio Aguero in that situation.
No, but if he doesn't come, Aguero's still going to score, isn't he, probably?
Yeah, well, then if you come, you have to got to get the ball. True. So that was unfortunate. And just to backpedal furiously, I did say City put out a second-string side, but, you know, City's second-string side, they're one of few teams who can pretty much fill each position with two players almost of equal ability. So,
Lee Johnson had lost 13 games in 16 last January, and the board stuck by him. It's Steve Lansdowne, isn't it, who runs Bristol City. That's astonishing, actually, even in the Championship, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's they sort of, it's funny, they went on a sort of summer debrief over the Severn Bridge to Celtic Manor, the resort there. I think it's for golfers. I don't know. I'm not a golfer myself.
I've played a charity golf day. Of course I have.
And they sort of went over there. Lee Johnson and Mark Ashton, the chief executive, sort of had a heart-to-heart. They were there for a couple of days. And I think that's where they sort of thought we need to do something about this, because it's amazing, really, to sort of come back from that. And he obviously is well documented. He's got a sort of a load of stick. And he's sort of is paying off now, reaping the rewards, isn't it?
But they play... I mean, I don't know if they all... I haven't seen a lot of Bristol City's games, but they play lovely football and they work it out from the back. They move the ball. They move the ball, it seems, more quickly than most teams in the Premier League.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think they sort of... That sort of philosophy is really, really sort of part of their... You know, what they're about. It's not sort of a one-off thing. They're really... I think that was the goal, wasn't it? The equaliser. I think that sort of came back to bite them a little bit, playing that way, if I'm trying to remember the goal, the way sort of City swept upfield. But... yeah, it's really encouraging. I just think it's great. You know, it's what you want to see.
I mean, I think it's a great endorsement for patience, basically, because Lansdowne stuck with Lee Johnson playing that kind of football. It takes a while to implement your philosophy, you know, and we've seen it before with Eddie Howe, who's had loads of time at Burma, Gary Monk at Swansea. And, yeah, patience is a virtue. They could have panicked, they could have sacked him, and... By not doing that, they're really reaping the rewards now. And he's a very innovative manager, Johnson. You know, he has drones flying over the training field, filming them. He has, I think, a big wall of screens on the training ground to help him get his ideas across with, you know, video and whatnot. So he's...
Measures the grass. Yeah, measures the grass. 23 millimetres, apparently, the optimum. That's the ideal length. He has a little gadget that he measures.
Each blade or...
I think just the length. Yeah,
who are we currently sponsored by? Because we do they
Flymo.
Is it? No, I think it's Gillette. Is it still Gillette? I don't know. If it is, they could use a Gillette sort of beard trimmer, couldn't they? Set it exactly the right length.
To be fair to him, though, it's a difficult one, because like Barry says, he's got a lot of sort of marginal gains, if you like, the 1% Johnson we'll talk about, but he's actually very conscious. He doesn't want to come across as sort of gimmicky, and I think that's sort of a fine line, isn't it, between sort of advocating these things and then actually, you know, sort of looking a bit
stupid. Well, I suppose as long as you're successful, you're not going to be seen as gimmicky. But if your things are going badly, you know, we've seen everyone used to pontificate about how great David Brailsford's marginal gains were at Sky, and now it's all gone pear-shaped for them. He's a bit of a laughing stock, and people just mock the marginal gains.
He did a lot about how to wash your hands, I seem to remember.
Yes, and
teaching everyone how to wash their hands.
Ferrying cyclists bedding around from hotel to hotel and things like that.
How did Lee Johnson turn it around? Was it just a case of his methods taking a bit of time to embed, or did they go out and spend lots of money, or did he change something very obvious?
It's a bit of a general sort of answer, but I think it's, to be honest, a bit of everything, but definitely what helps. I think he sort of said his players are a bit more wiser this year. They've got sort of another year under their belt. Some of the signings have been really quite shrewd, I would say. Sort of people, even though he's injured, Callum O'Dowda from Oxford, Josh Brownhill, who was at Preston, then Barnsley, or the other way around. And, you know, I think they sort of class them as sort of unproven, and they're sort of proving themselves now.
Has anyone seen Josh Brownhill's poem he wrote about Wayne Rooney when he was 11 that was published in a local paper?
No.
Would you like me to read it to you?
Please do.
This is Josh Brownhill. His ode to Wayne Rooney. My idol is Wayne Rooney. I think he is really doody. People call him fatty, but I call him classy. Necessarily work with my accent. He might not have good looks, but he sure has a good touch. That's why he is my idol, because he won a title. I wouldn't call him flash just because he's got lots of cash. He has a girlfriend called Colleen. People say she's mean, but she likes to spend his money. But she is such a lovely honey. I wish I was like him. I would have a permanent grin. His life is so ace, and he keeps up the pace. I wish this was me. One day, maybe we'll see. Josh Brownhill, 11, Birchwood Community High School, Warrington. There we go. That's nice, isn't it?
Just one thing I would add on Johnson is that in terms of those sort of young English managers, obviously there's always like Eddie Howe, Sean Dyche, Gary Rowett has obviously done that new deal at Derby. If you actually look at those three, what's that, four, Johnson's probably the next one now. So suddenly he's gone from almost sort of everyone, you know, sort of wants him out or whatever, you know, get rid, to actually now he'd probably be quite high up that list.
But they'll get a Johnny Foreigner in those big clubs with Champions League experience. I mean, I do wonder who will be the first, if ever a big club will go in and get a young English manager. What do you reckon?
It's possibly too early to start raving about how great Johnson is. He's obviously doing a very good job. But let's not forget that, what was it, the one win in 17 league games or whatever. And, you know, people, Eddie Howe was being touted as future Arsenal manager, future England manager. Then he kind of wasn't flavour of the month anymore. So it's all kind of cyclical. But
plus, there have been... Obviously, Brendan Rodgers isn't English, but he's come through English football and he got the Liverpool job at a very young age. Mark Hughes was relatively young when he got the Man City job. And so it's not as if it can't happen.
No, good point. On the subject of Championship managers, Ben, Ito Karanka, new Forest boss. Will the Forest fans be excited?
I'm not personally too sold on if it's the right appointment. I think... But then it's that sort of other problem of, you know, who's a better option than him. Obviously, they've got some brilliant young players there, so if he can sort of keep going along where, well, obviously Gary Brazil started there and obviously leaves him in a decent position and a couple of results, then there's a lot to work with.
Sack them as soon as they get promoted, if they do, because they were abysmal last in the Premier League.
That's true. On Nottingham Forest news, Eric Leeshai did get his dog.
A lovely little pug, is it?
I'm not a dog man.
It looked like a pug. I couldn't see it very well because it's very small, curled up at his feet.
Yeah, but that's the positive.
I think it was a pug or a black lab.
The positive of social media that they forced Mrs. Leeshai to get the dog, and he called it Gunner because obviously he beat Arsenal. I'm trying to think of which team it would have been worse for him to have beaten. The worst possible team.
Anyone called Rovers?
That would have worked quite well, wouldn't it? On to Arsenal then. They played Chelsea last night. It was rubbish. Do we think it's time that the Carabao Cup semi-finals are one leg?
Yes.
Yes?
I'd go along with that.
Yeah. Pull you in? Okay, yeah. We'll get that sorted. Wilshere went off injured, just a sprained ankle though. And Arsene Wenger will speak to Alex Iwobi after his rave-up. Breaking the 48-hour curfew before the Forest game when he did that very weak shot. You see, he sort of ran past a lot of people and then tried to toe-poke it in and it just...
You think that's because he had no energy left?
Well,
he was all danced out.
The Arsenal fans sang, "You should have stayed at the party." Maybe he was just... Yeah, he was just... Wait, why are you shaking your head?
No, I just don't think it's the crime of the century, him going out for a little dance with his mates. It wasn't even the night before the game, was it? It was the Friday night before a Sunday game.
I'm with you. And actually, there was another story about a young Man City player called Toisin Adarabioye, who coincidentally I did some work with at City a few months ago. Really nice, grounded, 20-year-old, young, humble, in the Man City first team, so must be really brilliant footballer. He bought a house for £2 million.
The Daily Mail weren't happy.
No, they're furious. Man who can afford house buys house. How dare he?
Well, I think the word you didn't say there was black man who can afford nice house buys nice house. I suspect if he was a white player of the same age, they wouldn't have run that unbelievable story, the scandalous story. I think the highlight of the Arsenal-Chelsea game was that Arsene Wenger watched from the press box, much to the delight of the hacks who were all present. Barney Rone wrote about how watching Wenger watch the match was much more exciting than actually watching the match. But I hope Arsene got a sense of how things work up there, you know, because they'll all have been, if it's the usual stuff of everyone shouting, you know, who crossed that ball? Did he get booked? who got the flick on?
Should we just all agree it was him?
Yeah.
did everyone like the Arsene Wenger Gardner story that came out before the last time he was in the stands, being banished to the stands, and he went to a game at Stamford Bridge. He was sat next to a man who said, "Hello, how are you?" And Arsene Wenger went, "Oh, hi, nice, I'm well, how are you?" And the man went, "I'm your gardener." And Arsene was like, "Oh, nice to meet you." This is the sign of a very big garden or a very busy man. On the subject of VAR, Gareth Brennan says, "Could you bring in Ron Vlaar to discuss VAR? It could be VAR with Vlaar." Chris says, "Sounds like a great idea. In his Netherlands-based home, Ron Vlaar judges all the week's VAR decisions. VAR from afar with Vlaar." And Ram says, "Can VAR come in handy for other walks of life? Like this Twitter thread where my quality pun from Monday, trying time to care about the League Cup, was ignored by the pod." There were a couple of VAR things. It all sort of seemed to go quite smoothly, Barry, didn't it? Takes a bit of time, but
yeah, I mean, there wasn't much of consequence to discuss, but the fans at the stadium don't know what's going on, and that's a problem that needs to be solved. There must be a way of doing it, and if VAR is here to stay, then yeah, that's an issue that needs to be ironed out, I would say.
Do the American football thing of throw down a yellow flag. You know, so play can continue, but you're aware that you may be called back for some offence.
I mean, that sounds sensible. And miking up a referee. I mean, you don't have to have it mic'd up for the whole time, but at least when he's doing that, that sounds like a sensible idea.
I would personally go with the... Well, personally, I wouldn't have it at all, but if it's here to stay and it looks like it is, maybe just give each manager 2 appeals per game, and if you waste one, you know, like in cricket, and I think that would work.
I think that would be really fun. Ben, I mean, you're young, so you presumably love, unlike the dinosaur next to you, you're a huge fan of technology in the game.
I actually, to be honest, I'm not really a fan of I'm sort of that person who thinks, just, you know, let the mistakes happen. I kind of go along with that. I think it's part of it. No. The Freddie Sears ghost goal, all of that, let's have it.
No, that's just the recipe for corruption. Seriously, I'm deeply suspicious as to why the technology hasn't been introduced till now. I think cultivating this culture where you can dismiss any error as, well, it was just human error, it was an accident. You can slip by so much corruption.
But there's no history of any corruption at all in football, Paul.
I think you'll find there is.
They used VAR with Ron Vlaar in the Monday night game, the FA Cup win, and Glenn Murray's winner was judged not to be a handball, mainly because it wasn't a handball. It was a glancing knee. But interestingly, they didn't use the only replay which really proved it wasn't a handball in the Ron Vlaar VAR Centre, which is out near Heathrow Airport, where they put all the referees. But it all worked out. So, look, we're still waiting for the chaos. The FA Cup draw itself has got some quite good good games, hasn't it? It's Yeovil Manchester United is a good one. Newport County Spurs, the winners of Cardiff Mansfield against Manchester City. There's a question from Mark, who asked it twice because he really wants to know the answer. And none of you, if any of you know the answer, I'll be amazed, but hopefully someone below the line does. Has a pair of twins ever been knocked out of the FA Cup by the same team in consecutive rounds before, as is likely to happen to Josh Murphy, plays for Norwich, they have a replay against Chelsea, and then Jacob Murphy, who plays for Newcastle United, who've been drawn against Chelsea? Excellent question. I'll open it to the panel for 5 seconds. There you are. But if you know, let us know. Liverpool play West Brom. Sad news of the former Liverpool goalkeeper Tommy Lawrence, a key member of Bill Shankly's side of the early 60s, passed away yesterday, age of 77. Affectionately known as the Flying Pig. That was his name. It's a lovely name. And I don't know if any of you have seen that the amazing BBC News clip a couple of years ago, which is just glorious, of a man walking around Liverpool City Centre asking people if he remembers a Merseyside derby from the 60s. And Tommy Lawrence goes, yes, I do remember it. I was playing. And the man going, oh. And it was just a wonderful moment. Sad that he's gone. Do you remember him playing, Paul? I don't know. Is it before your time?
It was before my time, yeah.
Are you older than Barry or younger than Barry?
I think, I don't know, what age are you?
44, I'll be 45 in March.
Okay, I am older, yeah.
Okay, are we having is there a big pod birthday party for you, Barry?
I'll actually be in Australia for my birthday.
Oh, really?
Going over to see the going future Mrs. Rushton. Now that apparently your trial separation isn't going as well as you seem to think it is.
Oh, well, that'd be really sad if she left me for you, Barry. I mean, I'd be happy for you.
Would you? I don't think you would.
It would affect. I think it would affect our chemistry, in inverted commas.
It would be great for the pod ratings.
It would be huge, wouldn't it? I maybe would try and move your chair or my chair because they're quite close. They're close enough for violence. Hey, but look, all's fair in love and war, right? She chooses you over me, so be it. And what a lovely way to end part one. Part one. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Polit Perfect Record writes, very, very small thing. It mildly annoys me when Max says welcome back after the breaks. We haven't gone anywhere. You've gone away and come back. How about we're back? Question smiley face. The thing is, we haven't gone anywhere either. So we're back, Polit, and welcome back to everyone else. Let's start with sort of boring but important football admin. The FA had a big announcement about what they were planning to do in 2018. Chief Executive Martin Glenn announced that it'll be implementing its own version of the Rooney Rule for appointing coaching staff from the England team. A BAME candidate will be interviewed for the All England coaching jobs in the future to follow the Football League's announcement that we'll be adopting a similar pilot scheme. Paul, I presume this is a good idea.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, on the one hand, you might suggest that it won't change anything because if somebody is racist, they're not going to employ somebody from the race they're opposed to for some reason, just because they're forced to interview them. But there are, of course, different strains of racism. And for racism born of pure ignorance, having being forced to meet someone from another background may unburden you of your ignorance.
I'm so racist, but I finally met somebody who's different to me and now it's all okay. Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, yeah, you're right. You can interview...
Well, people will have stereotypical views of certain races without presumably coming into contact with enough people from that background. And if they are forced to, they may, if they are actually have enough open-mindedness within them, be relieved of their prejudices.
So is there any point in having this if it's only going to be...
Well, it has worked in America, presumably for that reason.
In America, is it the same with the kind of interview stage? That's where it stops? Or do you push it to a level where you say, actually, it's got to be a certain number of people that you employ?
I don't think so. And I don't think that's what prospective black managers are asking for. They just want the opportunity to be part of the interview process, which many of them just don't get at the moment. And this is what this will do. You know, no one is saying they have to be given jobs. They just have to be given the opportunity, the same opportunity as everyone else, to go for jobs. And I don't know how anyone could be opposed to that. But reading the comments under some of the articles, and, you know, Ollie Hall tweeted about it the other day, and just so depressing to see the comments going, complaining about how this is just tokenism and box ticking. It's not that, you know.
It's a form of education, is what it is.
And, you could interview a black person for the job. You might not give it to them, but you might be impressed with them, and you might keep them in mind if another position comes up further down the line. It can only be a good thing. And anyone who is against it is crazy, in my opinion. The one thing I would say is that, you know, it was introduced in American football in 2003. I think there were two black coaches in the top level of the sport there at the time. 5 or 6 years later, there was eight. Then it went back down again. I think it's eight again now. But the Oakland Raiders have just appointed John Gruden, a white man. And, you know, they specifically wanted him. You know, he was their target. They've offered him given him a $100 million 10-year contract or dollar contract for 10 years. But they also had to interview a black candidate as well, or a minority candidate as well, which seems a bit silly because he was always going to get the job. But, you know, at least, if nothing else, someone got the experience of doing an interview for the job.
And look, of the 122 FA council members, 92 are over 60, 8 are women, 4 are from ethnic minority backgrounds. Of 92 Football League sides, 5 employer manager from black, Asian, minority, ethnic background, Northampton, Carlisle, Chesterfield, Wolves and Brighton. There was one sort of, I don't know if this was just Martin Glenn making a, just using the wrong words, or if it's a total, we should be totally outraged about women and men understanding banter, this terrible word in inverted commas, in different ways and having different expectations of it. Or should we focus on the positive things that came out of this press conference, or focus on that?
I think it's indicative of his actual mindset and the mindset of a lot of dinosaurs in the FA, which is kind of depressing. You know, it's ludicrous. I know plenty of blokes who are very sensitive about being teased or slagged off. You know, I hate using the B word. And I know plenty of women who are absolutely fine with it. You know, it's different.
People are different.
People are different, yes.
If you learn nothing from this pod.
But it might well have been a slip of the tongue, but I would be inclined to think it's more indicative of his general attitude, just going by his previous form.
I just hope the FA are sort of doing it for the right reasons, you know. I just, obviously they've taken some flack and they've sort of spoken about reforming. I just hope they sort of will see it through.
In the interest of promoting meritocracy,
yes, Paul.
Perhaps some of the heads of the FA could resign.
Do you want that to happen?
Yeah.
All of them?
I don't know them all. But
okay. All the ones that you know.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll see what I can do. Good news that they've announced that England will play a friendly away from Wembley. Elland Road, they play Costa Rica on June the 7th. There's one at Wembley against Nigeria on the 2nd of June. I know they've had to pay for Wembley, but just to encourage anyone who doesn't live anywhere near London to be able to go to watch England play is a positive thing. Everyone's nodding, which is nice. Everton's AGM was fun, wasn't it? Farshad Mashiri said that Lukaku rejected his new contract last summer because, quote, he had a voodoo message, and he got the message that he needs to go and join Chelsea. So not a very accurate voodoo message. Lukaku is considering legal action. I mean, it's bizarre, Barry, isn't it? Bizarre thing to say.
It made me feel very uncomfortable, I have to say. I didn't find it particularly funny. I presume it's not true. But, yeah, it smacks of a bit of racism to me, I think.
Well, isn't voodoo from Haiti, right? And that's quite a long way from the pilgrimage to Africa that I think...
Well, Paul knows Africa well, so he's probably better informed than anyone else here. I don't know.
I don't know if he meant it as a joke or what the hell he was trying to say. It certainly doesn't chime with what we know about Romelu Lukaku. He's always seemed In fact, he's always made clear his reasons for wanting to leave Everton were because he had a definite idea of his own worth and his career path that he wished to take. And witchcraft or marabutism or whatever would have had to do with that, I don't see how it could have been relevant.
It's just a strange thing from Mashiri. Ross Barkley, the agent got 7 million. So the fee was 15, the agent gets 7 million. I just don't really understand, Ben. Do you? Does anyone?
It's outrageous, isn't it? I think on Barkley, though, I think Everton could look a bit stupid sort of down the line. I think they could miss him. In terms of the actual fee, it's staggering, isn't it? I think when you look at actually further down sort of the pyramid, some of the fees that are asked of these smaller teams or, you know, League One, League Two, Championship clubs, that they have to then pay not only for the player, for the agent or representative, is just astronomical. And I think it prices a lot of clubs out, you know, time and again.
Over the days of Tommy Lawton, so you wanted a story about an old timer.
I mean, I wanted someone from longer ago than that. I wanted someone I'd never heard of, from Billy Blood. I wanted to get. Anyway, so just the Tommy Lawton story.
Well, seeing as how we're in January, it's transfer season, and the story of his transfer from Burnley to Everton is quite amusing from back in the day, because originally George Alisson, the manager of Arsenal, rang Burnley, and the phone was answered by the club secretary, and he asked them, is the chairman there? And he said, no, he's not here at the moment. And he goes, well, could you pass on a message? I'm interested in signing your striker, Tommy Lawton. He goes, okay, I'll pass that message on. And as it happened, three other teams also called that day, Newcastle, Wolves and Everton, I think it was. And but the club secretary only passed on one of the messages, which was from Everton. The club secretary was Tommy Lawton himself, because this was in the days of the minimum wage. And so he had a sideline job as the club secretary. He helped out.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And his granddad acted as his sort of de facto agent, and had always fancied a move to Everton, because he knew the groundsman there or something, and fancied he could get a job on the groundskeeping staff.
Ah, that's a lovely story. The mayor of Liverpool, Joe Anderson, who's an Everton fan, has written to the FA about the Barkley transfer. At best, this represents a very poor deal for Everton. At worst, it could be seen as a deliberate attempt to drive down a player's value in the transfer market so as to benefit the player, his agent and the buying club. There seems to be at least a public perception that collusion has taken place. Do you think mayors should get involved more, Barry?
I wouldn't disagree with much of what he said there, but I'm not sure what he's hoping to achieve by putting it in a letter to the FA.
Does anybody want to do any transfer gossip? Everton have joined the race to sign Theo Walcott. He's also wanted by Southampton. Anyone want to guess what the reported fee Arsenal are looking for is?
Well, I did the rumour mill this morning. And
so you should know.
The number being bandied about was 20 million.
Yeah, I've got 30 here, but 20. I mean, he looked so lost, didn't he? We talked about this on Monday.
The idea of him going back to Southampton, this idea that it's a homecoming, he's exactly what they don't need. Their problems stem to a large extent from the fact that they have a plethora of frilly wingers who can occasionally really sparkle but are totally unreliable when it comes to finishing consistently or doing anything consistently.
Don't say anything rude about Sofiane Boufal, Paul.
They've got Shane Long for that, haven't they, Paul?
Amongst many others.
Yeah.
RB Leipzig could let Naby Keita go to Liverpool this month.
Yeah, I think Liverpool would have to pay them an extra 13 million on top of the 50 they've already agreed. Alex Pritchard has gone from Norwich to Huddersfield. He's just has to do his medical, which I'm sure has pleased producer Mel no end as a Norwich fan.
Mm. He's a very good footballer. I really like him, Ben.
I think he's sort of, he came through Spurs, didn't he?
Yeah.
And obviously he's got come through sort of quite a decent sort of pedigree. So yeah, be an exciting move for them. I think Huddersfield have signed quite well as well overall. So he could be a sort of another one to add to the list of, you know, your Aaron Moyes and co.
I love Aaron Moyes. Palace are in talks to sign Diafro Sacco from West Ham.
That's, they could, overwhelming,
have,
isn't it?
Yeah, but they could play him and Bakary, two Saccos up front. Be great.
Three, don't they? They already have two.
Mamadou.
They've got Mamadou Sakho as well.
Yeah.
Three Sakhos in one team. I thoroughly hope that happens. West Ham,
you could have, if you did your transfer business properly, you could have a team pretty much comprised entirely of Sakos and Dembele's.
Someone should hopefully make it happen. West Ham will also listen to offers for Javier Hernandez. It's one of my favourite phrases in the transfer world. Surely everyone is. I would listen to offers for any. I mean, it's a nice thing to listen to, isn't it? He's sort of been underwhelming, I guess.
I don't think they've been particularly playing to his strengths, though. I reckon he'd be a good buy for someone.
Yeah, just 4 or 5 months ago that David Sullivan said he was West Ham's best signing in their history. And now they're issuing a come and get him plea.
It's like David Sullivan says things, isn't it? He should do a TV show with Farhad Moshiri, and then that would be entertaining, wouldn't it? Lucas Moura, PSG's winger linked with Manchester United. Anyone think that might happen?
But they wanted him before, about 5 years ago, and PSG beat them to his signature, so I don't know if they still want him, but he wants to go there, and he's been sort of, he's a bit of an outcast at PSG. He's made very few appearances this season, and they want to get rid. So, you know, if it's a mutually beneficial move, why not?
Right. And there's some transfer gossip. Obviously, there's no point in doing any of it. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. As Barry always says, we should just not. It should be a media blackout. And then you just go to the game and you see who you've bought when they come out on the pitch. Would you even have names in the programmes or team sheets announced? Or would it be literally as they come on?
You'd have to look. Probably announce them as they come out.
Oh, okay, well, I'm with you. Right, that'll do for part two. We'll start part three with Sid in Spain. Welcome back to part three. Before we go to Sid, in the break from part two to three, this one, Ben said, is it bad that you didn't know who Tommy Lawton was? It's okay, because how old are you?
23.
Okay, so... And you explained, because there will be young listeners who also didn't know who Tommy Lawton was.
He was the man who replaced Dixie Dean at Everton and became a very prolific scorer for them and England.
So then we asked Ben if he knew who Dixie Dean was.
Yeah, it's one of those you sort of know of him rather than know a lot about him. Yeah.
And then Barry went on a list of things Ben doesn't know because he's 23. Do you want to start those questions?
Well, producer Mel was, for testing something to see if it was recording properly, rang the speaking clock, and a discussion began about the speaking clock, and Ben said, "What's the speaking clock?" Then we asked him if he'd ever been in a phone box. He hasn't.
Not yet. Maybe later today.
I don't think they exist. Do they exist anymore?
Well, if you go into one, you might see cards with silhouettes of attractive ladies on them. Don't touch them.
So would you know how to use a phone box?
Do you know what? That's a good question, Max.
Give us your idea of what might happen.
I'm going in there. Yeah. I've got a bit of spare change. Yeah. I have no idea how much it costs, to be honest.
Okay.
I don't really know. And you're going in. I don't know if you put the money in first or if it's number first. And then I reckon I would go number first.
Yeah.
Money in. Phone. I'm sort of imagining it a bit hefty. And then am I away then after that?
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. Have you ever done a reverse charge call?
No. That's where you make the other person pay. That's real horrible, that, isn't it? You can still do that now, right?
Yeah, I guess you can. Yeah. I don't know.
But the person can refuse it. You're not slyly inflicted on them. So at the other end, they get, will you accept a phone call, a reverse charge phone call from Ben Fisher? And they go, no.
I also asked Ben if he'd ever heard the shipping forecast and got another blank look, but I think that's still on.
And your first footballing memory?
I would say 2002 World Cup, genuinely. Sat in primary school with the big black TV, big thick one with sort of, you know, the big depth. Yeah.
That's so depressing. Anyway, thanks, Ben. It's basically, that's just the jealousy of three middle-aged men.
This is what it looks like.
It's quite a picture. It's only come to me really quite recently, quite how depressing it is to not be really young. There you are. If you're young, you're bastards. If you're old, it's shit, isn't it? Let's go to Sid, who's in Spain. Sid, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, very good. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Yes, I should remember to ask you how you are. Most importantly, this is the first time I think we've spoken since Christmas. Has an extra ham been added to the garage?
Sadly not, because I failed to collect a aforementioned extra ham, although a couple of bottles of wine did turn up, although I must admit, I was slightly disappointed when a man came to the door with a couple sort of bottle of wine in a box for me, because at that stage I was waiting for my luggage to be delivered after its 5-day tour to Geneva.
Oh, did it have a nice time?
I think it had a lovely time. I think the sausages inside the luggage by the time they got there were a little bit the worse for wear, though.
So we didn't speak to you on Monday because you were at the press conference and the unveiling of Philippe Coutinho. How did it all go down? Where I was, he did more keepy-ups than Paulinho.
Yeah, he did. There was a moment where also they had him doing a rondo exercise, you know, one of these pig-in-the-middle exercise with about 6 or 7 kids who I'm guessing were kind of 7 or 8 years old. And it was actually genuinely a period where the ball went down into one corner and these two kids kept the ball for ages, nowhere near Coutinho. And he sort of spat in there like, is someone going to pass me the ball here or what? So he did the kick-ups well, but he wasn't quite so good in the rondo. Of course, he's injured at the moment, so you know, he couldn't take too much of a kind of a part in the game. But I was slightly disappointed as well that none of the kids tried to test out that injury by sliding into him.
Oh, that would have been a good two-footed challenge before you've even played. Over here, people over there are saying he's the new Iniesta. Is that actually what people are saying?
Yeah, let's kind of try and clarify this. They're not saying he's going to be the same as Iniesta, not saying he's going to be as good as Iniesta, but there is a sense that he is the closest thing to Iniesta in terms of someone to play that kind of role. I mean, bear in mind that you look at what Barcelona have signed in the summer and they signed Paulinho, who's a totally different profile of player, a totally different type of midfielder. And in fact, the manager, Ernesto Valverde, has been talking about that as a good thing, you know, as something that's beneficial to the side because it gives them a variety of different series of ways of approaching. But there's a very clear sense that they need to address the fact that Iniesta is 33. They need to address the fact that they're still seeking a player to kind of be Xavi. So they want someone who can play, who can pass, who can move the ball, who's technically very good from a slightly deeper role. Now, that's not to say that he's going to be the same, but there is a sense that position, that interior position, which is kind of just to the left of the central midfielder or just to the right of the central midfielder, the Iniesta role, is the role that I think they see him playing in. Now, obviously, the characteristics of the other players will condition that, but that's certainly the starting point. So he's not there. And I think part of the problem is that we've allowed ourselves to look at this through the prism of Neymar, right? He's there to replace Neymar. Well, in theory, Dembele's there to do that, although he doesn't really play in Neymar's position either. And Coutinho is much more there to be that player that they've been looking for a bit since Xavi left and that they will be looking for even more intently once Andres Iniesta goes. And at 33, of course, he hasn't got a huge amount of time left.
How much pressure does this signing put on Real Madrid? You know, they're already, 16 points behind Barcelona. It looks like they need to rebuild.
Yeah, it's curious, you know, because there is, I think off the back of this, there is a very clear sense that Real Madrid need to respond, which up to a point is always the way that it works for Madrid and Barcelona. It's always, you know, anything you can do, I can do better. But obviously that's been enhanced and deepened by the fact that Barcelona is so far ahead of them, by the fact that Madrid's start of the season has been so dreadful. I mean, you know, 16 points behind, admittedly a game in hand, but even so, let's call it 13 points. It's a huge gap to Barcelona. And there is a sense that they need to respond to it and perhaps there's a little bit of rebuilding to be done. And yet, it's slightly false because if you look at it in the summer, for example, Madrid last year, everybody said, they've got the best squad in Spain. After the summer transfers, pretty much everybody, and I include myself in this, we still felt that Madrid had the strongest squad in Spain. You look at the bench in the Clásico, was it 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago now, and the players that Madrid could bring on compared to the players that Barcelona could bring on, they're far, far better on the Madrid bench. And the other thing they did in the summer, which seemed to all of us, I think, to be a sensible approach, was they brought in a series of very young Spanish players who are going to be the next generation of really good football. People like Dani Ceballos, people like Teo Hernandez, and they've got Llorente back from a season on loan at Alaves. But of course, these are very young players, so maybe there's that slight intermediate step is possibly missing their squad, and they've missed James Rodriguez, even though I think they had to let him go. They've missed Álvaro Morata, although they had to let him go. So there is a sense that there's a little bit of a gap in the squad, and this is putting pressure on them. But I think that sense is a little bit false, because you look at Madrid's squad, and it's still incredibly strong. But yes, it is true that they have some issues to look at. And I think as well, a bit like Barcelona, they need to look at the transition to a new era, because, you know, you've got Ronaldo who's getting on a bit. You've got Gareth Bale who's almost always injured. And I think there's real hope now that if he can stay fit, and that's a big if, he's going to be a huge part of their recovery in the second half of the season, if indeed that recovery happens. Karim Benzema obviously has been having a pretty poor season, certainly in front of goal. So, yeah, I think there is a sense that this puts pressure on Madrid. but I think Madrid will be probably well advised to avoid allowing that to kind of effectively force them into making signings that they maybe don't actually need.
In the window over here, whenever it opens, the fact that Tottenham don't pay their players the equivalent money to all the big clubs, Harry Kane and Dele Alli are often mentioned and linked with Real Madrid. Is that just complete nonsense, or is there anything
It's not a complete nonsense in the sense that, look, these are obvious names to throw in there, and they are players that, of course, Real Madrid are aware of, and they will look for a striker in the summer. They'll ask again about Lewandowski. I think it would be the third time that they've asked them on him. They will certainly look at players. I think they will allow themselves to be not necessarily convinced by, but certainly it will be a factor what happens at the World Cup. And, you know, remember the last World Cup, they signed James Rodriguez essentially, I mean, not purely, but essentially off the back of the fact that he suddenly appeared as the next big superstar. It's curious because Madrid, I think, have actually succeeded in the last two or three years, in part because they've abandoned that idea of signing a Galactico each year. They've abandoned that idea of it has to be a massive name. And yet now there's a certain bit of pressure to say, right, we need to fly the Galacticos again. We haven't bought the last three or four really big names. Obviously, Neymar went to Paris Saint-Germain. Paul Pogba went to Manchester United. You now got Coutinho move, although I don't think he's yet seen as being in that category, and of course may not get to that point. But there is a little bit of pressure now saying to him, you've got to start buying superstars again, at least in part because the superstars, you know, Bale's been injured, Ronaldo is coming towards the end of his career. There is now, even more strongly than there was in the summer because of results, a sense that they missed out and that it might be a really big deal to have missed out on Kylian Mbappe.
And what about Cedric Bakumbu from Villarreal, reportedly going to Beijing for 75 million and pocketing a lot of money himself? What do you know about that?
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I mean, Villarreal said, and he said, that this was an opportunity they couldn't let go. And you know, I think it's a real pity, not least because he was playing up front with Bakker, so it's Bakker Bakambu up front.
Oh, that's
nice.
That,
of course, is no longer going to be there. So we might get Tom and Jerry at the back for Barcelona now with Yeri joining the club and playing alongside Thomas Vermaelen. There is a sense of sadness about this deal, but then at the same time, it's, you know, Bakambu was playing really, really well this season, but it's taken a little while for him to really explode. There's a recognition from everyone that this is a great deal for Villarreal. It's a great deal for him, and you know, the starting point is as yours was, which is there's so much money that, all right, off you go.
Yeah, I think so. Hey Sid, have a lovely weekend, and we'll catch up with you after all the games on Monday.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Cheers, pal. Thanks, Sid. Sid Lowe out in Spain. Let's go from Spain to the Premier League. Barry, what's the big fixture that's caught your eye this weekend?
I suppose it has to be Liverpool-Man City, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
I think it's the 13th meeting in club football between Pep and Jurgen Klopp. It's about even, I think. Fairly even, you know, their time at Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich, respectively. And I think only two of those meetings have ended in draws, so which bodes well for Sunday afternoon.
Will it be goals galore, Paul?
I hope so, although Liverpool will obviously be hoping that they concede less goals now that Virgil van Dijk is there. And he'll also play a role in setting up their attacks. I mean, a lot of Liverpool's threat will depend on how quick, well, first of all, on whether they can win the ball back off City, and then the speed at which they turn it over and turn that into a counter-attack. And Van Dijk, with his ability with the ball and also with carrying the ball out of defence as well as passing it, and can be valuable in that respect as well as his defensive qualities.
I mean, I think we're sort of all hoping that Are we all hoping that Liverpool, apart from Manchester City fans, this is a game that Manchester City could potentially lose?
Yeah, but I still think City might sort of steamroll them, to be honest. I know, obviously, Paul points out Van Dijk, and I think they're only going to get better, Liverpool, under Klopp, but
they still have certainly more weaknesses in their team than City do.
Anything else, Bas?
There's a few decent fixtures, you know, Tottenham, Everton, Chelsea, Leicester, I'd say, could be a cracker of a game. Newcastle Swansea is a big game for both sides, trying to avoid relegation. And of course, Stoke travel to Manchester United on Monday night.
At which time they may have Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane in charge, if reports are to be believed.
Yeah, do we think this is a good idea?
I think Martin O'Neill might keep them up. He'd have more chance of keeping them up than Mark Hughes would, I think, simply because he does have an uncanny ability to rouse team spirit and create that sort of momentum. Not that I got the sense that a lot of Stoke players weren't playing for Mark Hughes. I think the problem is that those players aren't good enough. Basically, Stoke's squad are in disrepair.
Do you think
they need more players than a manager?
Do you think I've heard a lot of people saying, well, Stoke, they don't, you know, their squad is not one of the three worst squads in the Premier League, or would you disagree?
Well,
with
I predicted them to go down at the start of the season because I think it is. They don't have reliable forwards who can score regularly at both fullbacks. There are obvious weaknesses there, weaknesses in central midfield. I know they've just signed a fullback, Bauer, from Austria, signed without the club having a manager. So they are trying to address that. And I'm sure Mark Hughes would say that if he'd been allowed to address it in January, then maybe he could have taken them back up the league. But unfortunately, the signings that they did make under him, especially when they spent a lot of money, were disastrous. You know, Mbula, Berahino, who knows when he'll score again.
It's kind of evil laugh, yeah. Paul, when you said Berahino.
Kevin Vimmer hasn't looked like an £18 million defender so far.
18 million?
Or I think it was, wow. Something like that. A lot of money anyway. And
Mbula was about 18 as well, wasn't he?
I think he might have been even more.
He scored a cracker. I don't know if it was on his debut. I think I was down at Bournemouth and he scored. And I just find it weird how players on debut score amazing goals.
Well, Jesse Rodriguez, another one. When they beat Arsenal early in the season, He looked brilliant in his first appearance, and we haven't seen him since.
You need to, I mean, really, if you want to stake your claim at a club, you need to do more than just one game, don't you? I think. Hey, Ben, tell us about your Football League blog then. Who have you talked to recently?
Yeah, no, I spoke to John Ruddy yesterday at Wolves. I was going to say Norwich, and obviously formerly of Norwich.
Cambridge, obviously.
And Cambridge, mm-hmm. Yeah. He touched on his time there with Mark Venus, and when he was at Everton, he was saying about how sort of David Unsworth, David Weir, and a few others, Nigel Martin, were very key to his development. A very interesting guy, very clearly intelligent guy, who maybe... I wouldn't say maybe under the radar is the wrong phrase, but obviously they've got so much attacking talent. He sort of said himself that sometimes he's not got too much to do. But he's obviously come in there under sort of slightly difficult circumstance in a way with Carl Akime, who is sort of undergoing ongoing treatment for, I think, his acute leukemia. And he's played every game in the Championship, and obviously things are going very well.
And so the plan is just every week go and find someone... Chats them about life.
Yeah, it's sort of it's not always going to be an interview. It's going to be sort of a piece, and hopefully it'll be of interest to sort of people who are interested in Football League, simply. There's obviously some great stories and tales to be heard.
And Gary Routt's just signed a new contract at Derby. So that's very good news for them, aren't they? Because he was rumoured to be going for the Stoke job.
Yeah, I think Stoke were obviously keen on him. I don't know how keen on he was in terms of going there.
Another Cambridge youth product as well.
Derby are obviously really going in the right direction. I think they're in second at the moment. There's a good chance they could stay there. Obviously, Cardiff have sort of fallen apart at the seams. I think they've lost their last four in the league and drew with Mansfield in the cup. So they need to bounce back. I think they've got Sunderland this weekend.
That's a good place. If you were to pick two sides to join Wolves, who would they be?
That's a tough question, Max.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, I would say...
Leeds.
I would say Derby, and I still think... Villa.
Oh, really? Has anyone seen this from South Africa? A Man of the Match award for the captain of... I hope I've pronounced this correctly. Have you seen this, Paul?
Is this the one where I think it's quite old, is it? The one where he thanks his girlfriend and his wife?
No. It's not this. No, it's this week, I think. Mamelodi Sundowns.
Yeah.
Captain Klompfo Kekana. The sponsors of the league are Telkom... And he won an extra 5 gig of data. there's a picture of him with a massive SIM card. Picture of a massive SIM card. Here he is. There we are. Collecting his giant SIM card.
Brilliant.
I mean, I don't know.
It's more useful than the sort of green brick you get for being Premier League Man of the Match.
Genuinely, every month I have to ask for an add-on. So I would love that.
And wasn't it Ewan McGregor at the Golden Globes who thanked his girlfriend and his wife?
Did he?
On Sunday night. I think he did, yeah, in an unprecedented act.
Hey, do you want Feedback Corner?
I'm not so sure I do. I saw someone gave us pelters for not mentioning Virgil van Dijk.
Well, that's, that was accurate feedback, I thought. You know, he's written this, Steve-O himself. A £75 million centre-back scores the winner in the last 10 minutes of their debut, which also happens to be a local derby. And in 59 minutes, in which you even managed to have a local journalist on the phone, it literally wasn't mentioned once. Interesting.
Yeah, it wasn't a conspiracy. We just forgot. There were so many talking points from that game. Yes, that was quite a big
we missed it.
We famously did a pod once. I think the massive game of the weekend was Manchester United against Spurs. I think this was before your time, Maxim. Just completely forgot to mention it. And everyone thought it was outrageous, bias, a conspiracy. No, we just forgot.
He does say he enjoyed the 10 minutes spent discussing kebabs. Lukas Podolski has opened a kebab shop in Cologne, and this is what got people most engaged, not any of football discussion. Valdera says, Valdera is born and raised in Cologne. He can tell the pod that Podolski also has an ice cream parlour as well. And it's called Ice Cream United. It's quite possibly the worst name, or alternatively, the best name for an ice cream shop.
Rory Fallon's got ice cream. That's his venture, isn't it now? Rory Fallon.
The Kiwi?
Yeah.
Where's his news? Where is it?
I think, I want to say St. Ives, but that could be wrong. It's somewhere down that way. Yeah, he's big into ice cream. That's his business.
Who did Paolo interview recently? The former, was it Zola and Di Matteo have a...
Yeah, Zola.
They have an ice cream emporium between them.
Do they? Christopher says...
Liam Toohey, who was the Republic of Ireland manager in the 1970s on a sort of part-time basis, was also part-time manager of Shamrock Rovers and ran an ice cream store. That was his full-time gig.
There you go. Christopher says the kebab section blew my mind. Was it Sean England never had a kebab?
Yeah.
You don't have kebabs?
I've had about three.
Christopher says... I can't believe you can grow up in Britain and avoid a kebab shop your entire life unless you were incarcerated from your early teens onwards. Jeremy says, why is it always a kebab shop? You don't say pizza shop or curry shop, do you?
You do say chicken shop, though.
You say curry house, don't you? Alexander says, in Holland, they do an aluminium foil tray, chips on the bottom, then salad, then doner topped with melted cheese. It's called a kapsalon because a hairdresser invented it. An Islanders on tour said, my mum used to buy frozen doner kebabs, right? Bung them in the microwave for 2 minutes and bang, there you go. You love them, Max. Lots of people ask this, Barry. If you don't like pizza, because Barry doesn't like pizza, right?
No, that's not correct. I have to always point this out. I don't dislike it. It's just not my go-to food. Sure. If there's nothing else available, I will have pizza.
If you don't like pizza or kebabs, what does Barry eat when stumbling home drunk at 4 a.m?
Well, it's a long time since I've stumbled home drunk that late, because I don't tend to stay out to that hour anymore because I'm not able to because I'm old. I'd probably go burger and chips.
Mark says, finally, I was interested to hear Max's suggestion that Mark Strong should play Steve Bold in Arsene Wenger the movie. He says, surely the movie should be called I Didn't See It, with Rowan Atkinson nailed on as Arsene Wenger.
Mark Strong's a loose FC fan. Mm. Goes to the dripping pan a lot.
He's an Arsenal fan as well. Jimmy Nail as Tony Adams, says Mark. I think we all go with that. I think everyone sings to Ray Parlour that he was Shirley Temple, so Shirley Temple would play Ray Parlour. Mark would like to know who should play the rest of the cast, Henri, Pat Rice, Dennis Bergkamp, so that's something to keep you occupied until we return on Monday. Thanks for your time, Barry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.